Okay, we are starting in Daniel this evening, Daniel chapter 12. And again, Daniel's wrapping up his conversation, or Gabriel's wrapping up his conversation with Daniel. And I just kind of want to use this to point something out, and then we'll go through the notes, look at a few charts. And then we're going to compare some things from Matthew and Luke and 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. And we've done this before. And if you have a question or something, please feel free to say something about that. Hey, we got some guests coming in. All right. Anyway, chapter 12. Just chapter 12, verse 1. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise, and there will be a time of distress such as not happened from the beginning of the nations until then. Now, that's interesting. There'll be a time of distress that hasn't happened since the time of the nations. It doesn't say there'll be a time of distress unlike anything that's ever happened, because if you say there's going to be a time of distress unlike anything that's happened, you'd have to, as a Bible student, say, well, what about the flood? The flood of Noah was a pretty serious time of distress. I mean, 8 people survived and a handful of animals. So notice what it says right here. This stays in biblical context. It says there will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of nations. And remember, after the flood, Noah came off, and then the people gathered around the plains of Mesopotamia, and the Tower of Babel was built, and then God scattered them into their own, you know, their own languages. They all formed their own cultures, and then the nations were formed out of that. So right before the time of Abraham, between Noah and the time of Abraham, you have the forming of nations. And so this would not include that, but since the time of Genesis and the forming of the nations, there's never been a time like this on the earth. You just kind of keep that in mind. It's kind of interesting, kind of clarifies that. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes, and again, that's when the Lord returns. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens. That's in eternity for being wise in this age. And those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever. So those who are wise and are leading people into righteousness will shine like the stars, brighter and different splendors of glory. But you, Daniel, notice again, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. We talked about that last time. Seal it up doesn't mean necessarily hide it, but put it on a shelf, document, so that when these things begin to happen, there's documentation that it's been prophesied. The book of Daniel will be there saying, hey, you can go in there and criticize the book of Daniel and say it wasn't written by Daniel because the Maccabean revolt is too precise in the prophecy. So it must have been written during the days of the Maccabean revolt. But when we're looking at these things, we've got records of these things going back before the time of Christ. We've got things going back at least to the Dead Sea Scrolls and before that. And so this, when it comes time for these things to start manifesting, we'll have documentation, you know, from 2,000-3,000 years ago. So, that will be a sign that, you know, God is in control. It says, many will go here and there to increase knowledge, and that's again an interesting verse. It means increased knowledge. Is that godly knowledge or just information that they're going to use to rebel against God? Then I, Daniel, then that's the end of the angel speaking right there. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on this bank of the river and the one on the other side of the bank. I mean, they're standing by the river. One of these said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters, how long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled? So in other words, it appears there's Gabriel speaking to Daniel, and then someone else on the other side and hovering above the waters, and he's asking a question. Now, this would possibly be the Lord himself asking, hey, Gabriel, what about this? Give him this information. It says, Gabriel was speaking to him. The man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river lifted his right hand and his left hand towards heaven, and I heard him swear by him who lives forever, saying, it will be for a time, times, and half a time. And then that's going to be the time that the people are going to be oppressed. When the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be completed. Now, again, that's going to talk about, you know, we talk about that 7-year period. There's definitely the 7-year period. And it's called, we got 7 years, and it's going to be a time of distress unequal since the beginning of the nation. So nothing's like this has happened. Again, that would exclude the flood. and that that time of terrible times is going to be a time, times and half a time, or 3.5 years. So we'll be talking about this 3.5 year period during this final 7 year break. The Jews will have had their temple operation through here. Here they're driven into the wilderness, and they're going to be a broken people hiding in the wilderness until these things have taken place. And so that's being clarified again. Now watch this. I heard, but I did not understand. This is Daniel, the prophet, who's gone. We're at the end of the book, and he's hearing this. It's like, okay, I heard what he said, but I don't understand. And so as I present this, or as we teach it, as we study it, we're trying to make sense of it, but understand, even Daniel was confused about the actual events. So again, we got to be very careful as we make a presentation on eschatology or eschatological events. He said, I heard, but I didn't understand. So I asked, my Lord, what will the outcome of all this be? So you've just had this terrible time, unlike anything since the time of the nations began. And that the people of Israel will be totally oppressed, finally broken until the end. And Daniel then, what happens next? What's going to be the result of all this? He replied, again, this would be the man speaking to Gabriel and Daniel, possibly the Lord. Go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Okay, that would give the indication. That's the end of the understanding. They're going to be taken off the shelf and looked at a time in the future, and then the understanding is going to come. Or then when we get to Matthew, you're going to hear Jesus say, he says, as written by the prophet or spoken by the prophet Daniel, and then he says, let the reader understand. Just that there may be a connection between, if this is the Lord speaking, seal up the scroll. And then in Matthew 24, he says, let the reader understand. It may be him then breaking the scroll open so there's more understanding. Again, just speculation, throwing it out there. Many will be purified and made spotless and refined, meaning they're going to be purified during this process of testing. But the wicked will continue to be wicked. So, right, that's an interesting line right there. Those who are righteous are going to continue to go through the purification process, becoming refined and being cast into an image for eternity. But those who are wicked, they will be unaffected by the fires of the trial. They'll be unaffected by the purification process. If you're righteous and you enter, the idea here is if you're righteous and you enter into some kind of persecution, it's going to refine you. Peter says, and it will demonstrate your faith. It's going to show your faith. It's more valuable than gold, but it's going to show the genuineness of your faith. So if someone with faith enters the trials, they're going to continue to build on that and build endurance. James says the testing of your faith builds endurance. So the more it's tested, the more you've got. It's like running. The fruit of the Spirit does not list endurance as one of the fruits of the Spirit. I mean, it's just not there in Galatians 5. It doesn't say endurance. It has a variety of things, and you can maybe slip it in there somehow with a synonym or something. But endurance, it indicates, is something that you have that as you use it, you develop it. The testing of your faith builds endurance. That's what James says. And by building that endurance, Peter says, it shows the genuineness of your faith. So that would explain this. The wicked will continue to be wicked. Why? Because they've got no faith. There's nothing. They're just going to continue to go through the same process. So a righteous person goes into the fire of testing, they're going to be refined. The person of wickedness goes in, they're not going to get anywhere. It's like running in grease. Well, and here it says this. It says, the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand. They have no knowledge of God to put in their soul, like we talk about in Hebrews 4, the rest. They have no place to put that information so they can reach in and get some traction on reality. They don't understand what's going on. And so they're making up false philosophies and false explanations. Those who are wise will understand, and that's why when the wise are tested or they have faith and they're tested, they understand, they can reach into that soul, the place of rest, and get some traction and build some endurance. Just like a runner builds endurance, you know, through running or training, the same thing happens. Your endurance is built. Hupomone is the Greek word. Okay. I'll read this to you, and then I'm going to give you a quick chart I can show you and explain it. And this is, you know, really, I don't want to say advanced, but we've got a long ways to go. It's going to take place The 1,000, these periods right here is 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days, because 42 months, make sure this works out here, times 30 days is 12. Okay, I almost made a mistake there. 1,260. So 3.5 times and half a times is 3.5 years, which is 42 months. 30 months is the prophetic month, you know, in the Bible. 30 day month. 30 days times 42 months is 1,260 days. Now that's important, because this is going to be 1,260 days. Then it says right this. It says the wise will understand. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there'll be 1,290 days. So this is all fitting together. It's all fitting together like a jigsaw puzzle. It is at the midway point, after the first 3.5 years, or after the first 42 months, the Antichrist enters the temple that is going to be rebuilt and sets himself up there as God. He's going to put in some kind of an altar, he's going to put in some kind of a dressing room, he's going to put something headquarters, and he's going to be offer some kind of sacrifice like Antiochus Epiphanes did in the Maccabean revolt, and he's going to desecrate the temple. The Jews are going to be driven away, and he's going to take over the Temple Mount. If this were to begin happening today, somehow the Muslims have control of the Temple Mount today. They would have to give it in a treaty to Israel for this to begin, or someone would have to take it from the Muslims and give it to the Jews, or convince the Muslims to give it to the Jews. Somehow there's going to be a transfer. And the Muslims have had that, the Temple Mount, and the nations have been trampling on it since the time Jesus spoke about it. Even going back, we could go back and press it to the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Nonetheless, the Jews will have it here at the halfway point. This is where the abomination of desolation takes place. Jesus said, watch for that. Jesus said, when you see that, start running. Flee to the mountains, talking to the Jews. Paul is going to refer to this event. So Daniel refers to it. It's referred to here. Jesus refers to it. Paul's going to refer to it. But if it's 1,200, how long will this be? 1,290 days. You've got to add 30 days on that. So there's a 30-day period here. Now you got to add that 30 days either after or before. If you add it before, and Jesus is just going to come back right here, storming in, boom, ends all of time, takes over the world. Well, it ends. So you maybe better put it over here on this side, so 1,290 days, it begins a little earlier than the halfway point. I mean, that's an option. I'm going to leave it right here. We start at the midway point, 1,260 days, but then 30 days, something's going to take place during this 30 days. Now, Jesus is God. Jesus is coming back in a resurrected body. It's the second coming, so it's going to be supernatural. It's going to be amazing. But he's not coming into a fantasy land. He's coming back into this created reality. There's going to be time. How do you know there's time? They're putting dates. They're putting days on here. So time, the sun's going to go up and the sun's going to go down. There's going to be the whole world. The people are going to have to travel. They're going to have to move across the earth. They're going to have to move across the sea. They're not just going to fly around at the speed of thought. There's still reality. The laws of science are still in place. In fact, that's important, because where we're heading, Jesus is going to take over. This is in Hebrews, it's throughout the scriptures. And he's going to take this planet, this creation, and it's going to increase its production astronomically. It's going to be the golden years. And he's not going to come in here and sprinkle magic dust all over, because it's like, well, how impressive is that? You just came in and changed the rules. He's going to come back to the same creation, same nations, the same scientific rules, and he's going to demonstrate this is how you were supposed to do it. He gave man dominion in the garden. Man lost it. So now we've got the second man, or the second Adam, and he's going to come down as the man, and he's going to have dominion over the earth like he intended man to have. Not dominion in oppression, but dominion in let's make this thing get up and function. And he will be a man. He's God. He's the Savior. But he will also be a man filling the role that he created man to do. Adam was supposed to do it and mess it up. So basically, Jesus says, okay, I'll become a man, and I'll use the dominion I gave to man to help man excel in this kingdom. And that's where we'll have people ruling and reigning with him. Anyway, so something's going to happen that's going to be, common, normal time. And there's a 30-day period right here. What could that be? That could be a time of the wars. That could be battles. Because you're going to have things, enemies, the Armageddon. It could be, and some people have slid the trumpets and then the bowls. That's the time where the bowls are poured out. I always keep the bowls on this side, the seals, the trumpets, and the bowls that are poured out. I keep it on this side, but maybe they take place in that 30-day period. I mean, if you're going to teach this, you've got to look at it and have an open mind. You can't make your little chart and say, I'm right, because you just ended education right there, because we don't have hard numbers here. We don't have historical evidence. We've got prophecy, and we're still anticipating. It's still in the mystery form. So it could be battles. It could be that's when the bowls are poured out. I don't think so. I like the idea of battles, cleaning things up, getting things in operation. But we're not done. It says, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished, halfway point here, and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, that's when it takes place right here, at the midway point, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. So if I'm doing this right, that would be another 45 days after that. So this is going to be set up, the abomination set up. It is not totally removed, conquered, gotten rid of, dealt with until 1,290 days. So that's why I think possibly, I'm going to suggest, that's where Jesus has come back, and now he's, you can read it in Jeremiah. What is that sound on the Temple Mount? I hear screaming and the throwing of things. It's the voice of the Lord has come back, and he's cleaning up the temple. It's kind of interesting, because that's what he did when he came the first time, the same thing. But Jeremiah is talking about the second coming when the Lord goes on there, and he's just cleaning house. I mean, there's the sound of what the tumult is the word, I think, and there's things are being thrown and things are being destroyed, and he's cleaning. That would take place right here, so that the abomination is gone by after a 30-day period. Now, it's not going to take him 30 days to clean the temple, but there will be battles. Now, what takes place during the next 45 days? So you got 1,290 days to here, 1,335 days to right here. This would possibly then be the judgments, where we're going to have the nations are brought to them and judged. The sheep and goat judgment. If whoever's alive on the earth at that time is going to be brought and judged. We know where it's going to be. It's the Valley of Jehoshaphat. It's an extension of the Kidron Valley. It's on the east. Interestingly, I learned this in a public school on a diversity day when we had different people come in from different cultures and different things in life. You maybe have a blind person come in and talk, maybe have someone from another religion come in and talk, someone that drives, I don't know, a horse and buggy comes in. I'm trying to think of something funny to say, and I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head, so I have nothing. But what was there was a Muslim, a doctor in town of Des Moines that came over to speak, and he was a Muslim, and he came in and talked about the Islamic faith. So I was in there, and, I was listening, and he started talking about Judgment Day. Now I've got my opinions, I got my theology, so I'm sitting there listening. And he says, Jesus is going to come back and judge everyone east of Jerusalem in the Kidron Valley. And I'm like, what? That's Christian doctrine. I mean, it's like he was saying the same. So then, of course, I asked a couple questions, not rude or anything, but it's like, so, I mean, what about you? He's, oh, yeah, we believe in Jesus. Now, Titanic faith addresses some of those, the interest in the details of that. I tried to say a word I couldn't say. But it was interesting that, anyway, that there is going to be judgment take place, and there's going to be then, if you've got the trumpets and the bowls, basically torch the earth. The earth is destroyed. I mean, if we go through the seals and the trumpets, I mean, especially the seals, the bowls that are poured out, Earth has to be moments, hours away from total extinction. We talk about save the planet. I mean, there's no water. There's no fresh water. The seas are polluted. There's no air movement. I mean, you cannot survive. The sun is scorching people. And it's God pouring out his wrath. I mean, he's killing the earth. And so when Jesus comes back, it's not just going to be like, again, magic land. He's coming back to a earth that is moments away. If you read the scripture, if you read it literally, it's moments away from extinction. So there's going to be, besides the battles, there's going to have to be a cleanup time, a kind of resetting. So that's, I think, what is taking place right here, because it says, and that's why I like to have the word judgment right here, because it says, blessed are those who reach the 1,335th day. Blessed are you if you reach right here, because on this side of that line, after 1,335 days, the 1,336th day, after this is set up, the abomination, you're in the kingdom of God on earth. You have made it through the 3.5 years. You've made it through the battles. You've made it through the judgments. And you now have your place. Welcome to my kingdom. He says, to the sheep and goats, depart from me to the goats, to the sheep, enter into the kingdom I prepared for you from the beginning of time. You will have made there. And that is what, if the Lord is speaking here, he is saying, blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of 1,335 days. Now, understand what we've just put up here on the board. Look how we have ourselves locked in. I mean, if you can identify the Antichrist taking over the temple, which should not be too hard, it's going to be an individual who is going to take over and shut down the Jewish sacrifices. They've been shut down with the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. They are shut down by Judas Maccabeus, but Antiochus Epiphanes, back before the Maccabean revolt began, caused the Maccabean revolt. But when it happens again, first you're going to have the Jewish sacrifices begin on the Temple Mount. Then you got 3.5 years, and then they're forced stopped. The 7-year treaty is broken, and the Antichrist, whoever that is, takes over right here because he's having trouble, remember, from the south, from the east, and from the north. There's kings from those three directions that are invading him or challenging him. The king of the south is dealt with, but he still has to deal with the king of the north and the king of the east, which is taking place right here. And then the Lord appears. And now you got a whole problem. Now you got all the armies of mankind fighting against each other, now realizing we've got a bigger problem. We've got an alien invasion coming. But nonetheless, my point, if you can identify this, then right here in the book of Daniel, you've got 1,335 days before you are standing in the established kingdom of God on earth. I'm going to have to stick with that. I mean, that's what the text says. If we get here and things don't materialize, it's like you can imagine how I'm going to be scrambling trying to adjust my theology and what those numbers really mean. But right now, it seems pretty solid. You got 1,260 days, you've got 30 days, you've got 45 more days, and then you've got... That's interesting, because there are things that we do not know, but there are... That's why we're talking about eschatological events. There are things that when they begin to happen, we're in. We may have been going through a history, like I said, cycling towards this moment, cycling towards it, then God stops it and sends it back, and we reset, cycling towards it, and again, different people could have been this Antichrist throughout history, but it's always been stopped. But once we cross this line, you're on go. It's dated, it's timed, and that's kind of interesting to see. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. If you want a chart now, here we go to the notes. I'm on page 4, and I think maybe it's on everybody's page 4. I had a hodgepodge of notes I put together tonight. And on top of page 4, do you see that right there? You've got a nice drawing, just like what I did on the board, but it looks nice. Now, if we had our technology, and we should do this, we have the capabilities, we're just afraid we'll mess it up, we could actually pop this on the screen right now in the live feed, and I could be like saying right there, you see it, and be right in front of my face right here. But the best I can do right now is, well, I could do better, but I'm not trying. But you've got your 3.5 years, and then you see the 7 years, then you see at the end the 30, the 45, and then the 1,000-year reign right there. So that's where that comes from. And that's, again, just flat out interesting. Now, we've got a lot of things to understand and go through before we get there. While you're looking at that, drop down to the chart below it. And this is what I'm going to present to you as we go through some events. Some of these events are pretty solid and pretty agreed upon, independent of someone's eschatology. Now, dude, there are people that, first of all, don't believe the Bible. Then there's people that think these things have already taken place in the fall of Jerusalem, which really doesn't make sense, because that would mean the fall of Jerusalem was the most grievous day the world has ever seen since the beginning of nations. Well, it was a grievous day for the Jews, but I mean, I think here in Iowa at that time in 70 AD, I don't think they had any problem at all with the Roman destruction in Jerusalem. The sun came up, the sun set, and they didn't know what happened. So that doesn't make sense to me. So, I mean, I would disagree that these things have already taken place. Some prophecy obviously has taken place, but some things are left. Some of these events, people are going to have different opinions about if they're figurative, if they're actual literal, and then how they're taking place. But nonetheless, if you look down there at the bottom of page 4, there's a chart. You can see where I've got written church age, and then I've got the 7-year tribulation. And the first thing that you see right there in Daniel chapter 9, and I'm going to give you a chart here in just a moment, that Daniel's going to say it, Jesus is going to say it, Paul's going to build on it, John's going to refer to it. The world leader makes a 7-year treaty with Israel, according to Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. The ruler of the people who will come is going to make a 7-year treaty with Israel. Now, at the halfway point, Daniel says it, Jesus says it, Paul says it. That leader, we call it the Antichrist, is going to break that 7-year treaty after 3.5 years or after 42 months. This will be a time of distress right here, this 3.5 years, not for the Jews, because they're given the Temple Mount. They're up and running on the Temple Mount. They think they've met their political Messiah. That's exactly what they're looking for today. The Jews today, God bless the Jews, I'm cheering for the Jews, but the Jews, by religion, now again, a Jew can be a Christian. How can they? Well, Peter was a Jew and he was a Christian. Paul was a Jew, he was a Christian. So you can be a Jew and be a Christian just like we can be a Gentile and be a Christian. In fact, the Jews were Christians before the Gentiles were. But if you've rejected Christ and you've rejected Christianity, you've rejected the New Testament, and you're a Jew and you're still a religious Jew, you would not be on the side or in agreement with Christianity. Not because you're Jewish, but because you've rejected Christ. And so you're going to continue with your understanding without having recognized Christ. We are waiting for the Jewish Messiah to come. I recognize it as that was Jesus. Some Jews recognize Jesus was the Jewish Messiah. They've placed faith in him. They've entered into what we call the church age, into Christianity. But if you are a Jew and you say, now again, I'm speaking for the Jew and I'm not a Jew, but I've talked to different individuals, especially in Jerusalem, they're still waiting for the Messiah. They think it's going to be a son of David, a descendant of David, who's going to come. Now watch, they're not looking for our Jesus or someone that's going to fill the role of Jesus. Because when we say Jesus, the Messiah of the Jews, we're saying it was the eternal God who took on flesh and became a man. So my Jesus is actually God himself, the incarnate Emmanuel. Like Isaiah, the Jewish prophet, says, his name will be Emmanuel, which means God with us. He became flesh. He continued to be God, but he also joined the human race. That's why it's going to be a glorious day when he comes back, because he's not just coming back as God. He's coming back as a man to run this planet, this universe, the way he intended man to run it. He gave man dominion. Man threw it away. He's going to be a man himself, and I'll do it myself. And that kind of fits in that. The Jews are not looking, when their Messiah comes, one of the criteria is not that he is God. So it's like, well, how will they accept this guy, make a treaty with him and say that must be the Messiah? Because they're looking for a political leader. They're looking for a worldly individual who's got political power that will show them favor, similar to what Cyrus did and sent them back to build the temple. I mean, it's going to be a replay of Cyrus. Cyrus makes a decree. Here's a copy of it right here. It's a simulation of it. Makes a decree right there. It says tells all the nations, go back to your home countries, go back to your cities and rebuild your temples and reestablish your cultures. Cyrus did that. There's going to be one that's going to come like that, the Antichrist, and he's going to do the same thing right here for the Jewish people. And they're going to reckon it. In fact, Isaiah calls Cyrus, he calls him the Anointed One. He says, or God called him through Isaiah, says, I will raise up my Anointed One. And then eventually starts calling him Cyrus. So Cyrus was the Anointed One that was going to set up, send Israel back to rebuild their temple, the Zerubbabel's temple. It wasn't Jesus Christ, it wasn't the Jewish Messiah, but it was an Anointed One that was like a Messiah. They're looking for another one like Cyrus. So whoever this political leader is, if he's American, if he's African, if he's Muslim, Cyrus was Persian. No matter who it is, if they come and say, we'll make a treaty, we want you to restore your sacrifices to your God, they're going to say, this is him. This is the Messiah. And they're going to know, you Christians were wrong because we've been waiting for this individual the whole time. And you wasted 2,000 years talking about this Jesus who became God, and God is Jesus, and all the Trinity. That doesn't make any sense at all because there's three in one, and one is like, sounds like a Beatles song. It's like, whatever, they're going to throw that whole thing away and say, we found our Messiah. This is the one that they wanted. Now, again, there's a lot of things they've got to make connections with. You know, he's got to be somehow connected to the line of David. But anyway, they'll find him. They'll find a political leader. Now, so one, you're looking for. Now, I'm not saying this is happening tomorrow by any means, but someday it's going to happen. And as we try to understand the times of where we're at, where history is headed, this is where history is headed. If it's heading there today, or if it's heading there in 100 years or 1,000 years, we're cycling. We've been cycling towards this since the beginning of man. Probably from out of the Garden of Eden, we've been heading towards this moment. Things had to be put in place, but that's where we're heading. So, when he comes, he'll make a treaty, and they'll think, we've got this. So the Jews, during this first 3.5 years, they're excited. They think, we've found the Messiah, we're rebuilding, this is them getting ready to rule the world. Because the promise is, all the nations will come to Israel. All the nations will stream to Jerusalem to learn of the ways of Yahweh. Now, that's going to happen over here in the Christian doctrine that lines up with the Jewish doctrines of the Scriptures. But for them, they're making it happen right now. Meanwhile, this guy, this Antichrist, is trying to take over the world. He's trying to become a world leader. However this all works out, we've got some clues about him. He's going to run into trouble with the king of the south, who doesn't want to play nice with this Antichrist. And the king of the east, which today would be China, it doesn't want any part of the Antichrist. So, one, it would probably not be a Chinese individual. Could be, but he would be out of line with his culture. Because, again, we're making connect. We've got the verses, but we're overlaying the text of Scripture with where we're at today and saying, oh, here's the parallel. Now, we've done that for thousands of years, and this parallel blows away in history. And knowing what this remains, these facts remain, the next age comes later, that doesn't match. And here's how they'd apply it. Imagine making all this thing make sense during the Crusades. They did. They all made sense. In fact, that was a motivation to do the Crusades, that they had their own doctrine, way of interpreting this. So again, I know I'm making assumptions or speculation, but understand the difference between hardcore scriptural evidence and then us taking our culture and our world today and saying, how does it fit? How does it look? This guy, this Antichrist, who makes a treaty with Israel for 7 years, he's going to break at the halfway point, sets himself up to be God, is going to have trouble with the Chinese. Are not going to want to come and cooperate with his plan to rule the world. The king of the north, which would probably be Russia or the states right underneath Russia, are not going to want to do this. They're going to be a problem with that also. Now, there's much more that we could say about that. He's going to break this. Now, this period right here, where would the Christians be? Now, Ian, you know this, but I'm going to say it anyhow. The Christians, the church, the believers in Jesus Christ, which would be both Jews and Gentiles, which would include me right now today, they're going to, it says, be raptured. They're going to meet the Lord in the air. That is the day of salvation. The question of when does this rapture take place? You've got the rapture taking place before here, going up right here. We meet the Lord in the air here, called pre-trib. You've got some kind of a mid-trib right here. At some point in here, you meet the Lord in the air. And then you've got the Lord coming down, and they meet the Lord here. This would be called post-trib. Pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib. Those are the ideas of the rapture. There's really no doubt. This is the thing you can't argue. Say, there is no rapture. There is a rapture. It's a harpazo in the Greek. It means to be in one place and taken by force to another place. You're being taken by force to meet the Lord in the air. It says the dead will rise first. Those who are living will be translated and meet the Lord in the air. It's the harpazo. From the Latin word that means, sounds like rapture, it means to be taken by force. If someone's riding by on a horse and some lady's right here and he reaches out and grabs her, he just harpazoed her. Or if Philip is with the Ethiopian eunuch and the Spirit comes by and takes him up to another location by the Spirit, the same word is used right there. Philip was harpazoed by the Spirit. The word is the same word that we translate rapture or the catching up. He was harpazoed. So we will be, the believers will be harpazoed. They will be raptured to meet the Lord in the air. Now the question comes when? Again, now I'm getting into shaky territory. I detail it in the Titanic Faith book. But the beginning in the 1800s, and you do your own research. Everyone's, it's just like today, whatever, if it's the vaccine, if it's the border, if it's the election, if it's, Coke or Pepsi. I mean, it's like you take all the facts and you put them on your own side. Thank you. That's our wardrobe coordinator. Has it been unbuttoned the whole time? Okay, let's shut it off and start over. Everybody tries to use the same facts. The way I came down on it, I didn't always used to be on this side, but it wasn't until the mid-1800s that this rapture, pre-trib rapture, was even on the charts. We found somebody. They found an old writing in an old Bible somewhere, and I've got that document in Titanic Faith, and it's not what they say it is. I actually bought the book and read it. It's not there. So there's really, I mean, again, I don't want to go through that whole thing. That's like a 3-week study in itself. So there is a preacher rapture. That'd be great, because before all hell breaks loose, we're gone. And it's like, that's good news, but it matches the Western church perfectly. It's like, no pain, no suffering, we're out of here, and the whole world's going to go to hell. So it's like, why study? I mean, why worry about it? It's like, just have another potluck, sing some boyfriend songs to Jesus. It's all going to be fine, because we're not going to see anything. We'll never be persecuted. Because, God would never let his church be persecuted. I mean, people have actually used that as an argument for the pre-trib rapture. God would never let his church suffer. I mean, that's where that profanity starts popping in my mind right there. It's like, and I got to stop talking, because it's like, I mean, the first thing they did is kill James after they killed Jesus. And then they started arresting the apostles. And then they're chased all over. Every one of the apostles either died or was persecuted for the sake of Christ. Peter was crucified upside down. Paul had his head cut off. And then it continued for the next 3 centuries of Christians being, they're an underground subculture. Until Constantine came in the 300s. And then today you've got persecution in China. You've got persecution. We've had persecution all across the globe. We've had persecution of the church persecuting Christians. Because the church has their doctrine. The Christians want the Bible. There's a time in church history, you go back to the 1500s, where to have a Bible was illegal. You had a death sentence. If you had a Bible study in your house, it wasn't the secular government coming after you. It was the church. You don't have the right. You cannot talk about that. You can't even have a copy of that. We'll tell you what it says. So the church, the believers, have been persecuted throughout. To think that there's going to be a 3.5-year period of persecution of the Christians, say that would never happen. I mean, that's just flat out ignorant. I mean, you're going to have to theologically really solidly prove this pre-trib rapture. If you're going to argue, God would never let his church suffer. I mean, I've got a whole chapter in the book just on suffering. So during this time, while the Jews are on the Temple Mounts, offering sacrifices, this was going to be a time of great persecution. This was also a 3.5-year period. This is the persecution or the suffering of the Jews, because they're not suffering here. This is the slaughtering of the Christians for 3.5 years. This is a time where the saints will be trampled. Daniel talks about it. The saints will be trampled. It'd be you can be a Jew and be a believer. But if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, there's going to be persecution right here. Then there is here the mid-trib rapture right here, sometime in this mid-trib. This is where I put it right now, that Jesus is going to appear in the sky. He's going to appear in the atmosphere. Once you do that, once you have Jesus appearing in the atmosphere, the sign of the Son of Man appears and does not go away. He appears. He doesn't come down and land on the earth. He appears, and we meet him in the air to be with the Lord forever. It doesn't say we meet him in the air to run away to heaven, because he's not going away to heaven. When he appears in the air, he's on his way here. Because when they see him in the sixth seal, when the world sees him, they say, "Hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb." They know it's wrath time. The world, if the quote is a literal quote of the people, the kings and rulers of that time, they are afraid of the wrath of the Lamb, because what's coming now is the seven trumpets and the seven seals. At the end of that time period, Jesus coming to judge the nations and set up his kingdom. This is the time that was just said in the end of Daniel. There's not been a time like this since nations were formed. Now, this will be a time of persecution. It'll be a great persecution. It's the great falling away. There's going to be Christians that are jumping ship. I might jump ship. Today, I'm a Christian, and I'm telling you this, but when they start, cutting my fingers off or whatever they're going to do, or giving me vaccinations or whatever, I just said that to be politically funny. If they start, jeepers, don't shut it off. Jeez. I just heard the clicks go away. But anyway, this right here will be a time of serious persecution for the Christian because of their stance. This will be the persecution of the Jews. Now, if we look at this again, I'm trying to introduce this chart to you. And I know we've talked about these things before at different times, but especially in our culture right now, it's like you almost have to read through this every month and kind of get like an update. It's like, because, I don't know, it just seems like things are moving quickly. Now, I don't know if we're moving towards this, but as a culture, we're moving towards something. Is it going to lead to this? I don't know. I mean, cultures have moved towards it before and not gone there. But we are in a condition right now unique to the history of mankind where the whole world is connected. I mean, like it's never been connected before. Rules, laws. I mean, they're talking about global government. I mean, Rome thought they had a global government, but they still had to build a wall and keep the barbarians up there in Ireland because they couldn't defeat them. And so it's like, anyway, I could go on. Okay. At this halfway point, this world leader breaks his treaty with Israel and begins setting himself up as God, and Israel now is supposed to flee, get out. And they're going to be under oppression for 3.5 years. Now, you see I've got on that chart, I've got a little throne in the sky there. The sign of the Son of Man appears. That's where I think the rapture takes place. We meet the Lord in the air. And in Thessalonians, like I said before, when it says we will meet the Lord in the air, we will meet the Lord, it means to go out and greet a dignitary to escort them back into your city. It doesn't mean, your boyfriend's here, go meet him in the driveway, and you get in the car and you drive away for a date. That's not the word. It's like the ambassador is in the driveway. You better get out there and greet him because you're going to walk him back into your house. Meeting the boyfriend for a date, you get in the car, you drive away. Meeting the dignitary, the ambassador in your driveway, you go out and meet him to welcome him into your home. The word here, it's a technical term for meeting a dignitary. It's used in the book of Acts when the Roman church went out to meet Paul and brought him into the city. So, I mean, that clears that up. And it says we'll be with the Lord forever. Well, it doesn't mean go to heaven. It means wherever the Lord's at that point, we're going to be with the Lord forever. If he goes here, wherever he goes, we're in the Lord's presence. And then this sign, this is interesting because right here is where revival begins to take place on the whole Jewish nation. They thought this Antichrist was their Messiah, their political leader, but when they see the sign of the Son of Man appear, they realize, oh my gosh, that's the Messiah. And Zechariah says they mourn for him, the one they pierced. The prophets even says they'll see the one that they pierced and they'll mourn for him. They'll go, oh my gosh, it was the Christian Messiah. It was the Jewish Messiah was the one who started the Christians or started the church. And they'll realize but the church is already gone, including the Jewish believers are already gone. Now they've got to go through 3.5 years of isolation. They'll be protected. And we can talk about that during this time period right here. But they'll eventually meet the Lord when he comes back at the second coming and lands on the earth. If it's Mount of Olives, if it's in Edom, if it's the Battle of Armageddon, if it's several times that he's coming and going. Because he'll be running things from his throne in heaven, which is now in the atmosphere. That's where he pours out the trump, or sounds the trumpets, pours out bowls. It says that's why all these verses now, just if you just now think about all those obscure verse in Revelation, they looked into heaven and they saw the temple open and they could see the Ark of the Covenant. It's like, what? The world is looking into heaven? Well, it's like hovering over in the atmosphere, because that's also why all of a sudden it says the sun turns red, or the moon turns dark, and the stars fall out of the sky. The sky is rolled up. That's the sixth seal. You still got the trumpets and the bowls. You still got the Antichrist isn't even on the Temple Mount yet, and the whole universe just gone. I mean, it's like, well, that creates a problem for the rest of the book, because we're supposed to have a temple, we're supposed to have events. It's like or the stars fell to the earth. I mean, if a star actually falls to the earth, you understand it's over, game over. I mean, the water could fall to the earth and flood the earth. But if we actually had a physical star fall to the earth, I'll believe the Bible, but I can't explain that. I mean, that's just a flat-out miracle, magic dust. But if all of a sudden the glory of God appears in the atmosphere, all of a sudden the sun, it's way, you can hardly see it. The moon, it's dwarfed by the glory of God. The nations recognize it. The Jews recognize it. He's here. And then at some point, he opens the temple and they can see the Ark of the Covenant. And it says they go over and they pour out the bowls or the vials. They pour them out. And it's like, it all makes sense that here, especially the sign of the Son of Man will be like lightning from the east to the west. Everyone will see it. It's not going to be like, well, you know, like, you know, the Jesus came back, and you got to go out and, you know, and go to some cultish living room Bible study to meet the Messiah. It's like it's a secret. It's like, no, when Jesus comes back, it's like the world's even saying it's the one who sits on the throne and the wrath of the Lamb. They even identify him. The Jews instantly know it's the Messiah that they missed. We made a huge mistake. So with that information, that's that kind of that chart right there. Let's go back to. You see this chart on page 3, bottom of page 3. It's a little blocks. And you've got the books at the top, Daniel, Matthew, Luke. And when we're talking about Matthew, we're talking about Matthew 24. When we're talking about Luke, we're talking about Luke 21. When we talk about Paul's writings, we're talking about mainly 2 Thessalonians and 1 Thessalonians, and then Revelation. And the parallels that you've got there are in the left column, where you've got some of these events that take place between 165 and 70 A.D. that are prophesied in Daniel and referred to in Luke. Then you've got the early signs, maybe the first 3.5 years. That's this first 3.5 years. Does everybody know where I'm at? I'm right here on this chart right here. This first 3.5 years right here, that's spoken of, that's spoken of in Daniel and in Matthew 24, verses 4 through 14. Then the Antichrist is revealed. You can find that in Daniel, Matthew, 2 Thessalonians, and Revelation. The persecution of the church during this time, or the believers, Daniel, Matthew, and Revelation. The rapture, look at this. Now, this is amazing if this is accurate. Of meeting the Lord in the air, it's referred to in Daniel 7, Daniel 12, Matthew 24, Luke 21, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, and Revelation chapter 7. That is a situation where you've got the Lord in the air or in the atmosphere or the sign of the Son of Man that all the nations are seeing. You've got believers that are being gathered to him, if it be by the harpazo, the catching away, or the angels gathering the chosen from the four winds of heaven. They're all coming together. And in Revelation chapter 7, there's a great multitude standing in front of the throne. And John is asked, the elder showing him around, whoever it is, asks him, John, where have these come from? And he goes, I don't know. I'm just watching a vision. He goes, these are those that have come out of the great tribulation. Well, this is right here. This half is the great tribulation, which means it takes place on this side where we've entered into those days that are unlike any days since the nations were created. Why? Because during these 3.5 years, this is the great tribulation. This is a persecution. This is the Antichrist slaughtering people that don't agree with him. I mean, you could do that in Russia. You could do that in America next week. I mean, just be careful how you vote. Because I mean, that's not the worst days the world's ever seen. We've seen entire nations destroyed. This last 3.5 years right here is the worst days because the Lord has returned and he's come back in wrath. And his intention is to wreak havoc and destroy the kingdoms of the earth that are in rebellion towards him. He's going to sound the 7 trumpets. He's going to pour out the 7 bowls. It's the worst any time, and he's doing it right from here. He's watching it happen. And the world knows it's not. They're not like, well, this must be some kind of climate change. It's probably the Republicans. It's probably the Democrats. It's kind of like, no. This is not a conspiracy. It's him. It's like everyone is agreement. They're all, it's him. They curse him. It says they curse God. Even though all these things take place at the end, they still curse. They don't curse the Republicans or the liberals or their neighbor. They curse him who's seated on the throne because he's up there watching himself pour these things out. So that doesn't sound like very Christ-like. Right. Because you don't go to a good church. Because if you read the Bible, this is Christ is the Lord and he is coming back in wrath. Now you've been saved from his wrath. You will never face his wrath. See, that's why we shouldn't be here. Now, this is not his wrath. This is persecution. This is a chance for you to testify to the truth of the coming kingdom of God, and you better get ready. And while they're cutting your head off, I got one more thing to say. Jesus is coming. You can kill me, but he still... And you died bearing testimony. He's not going to spare you from that. He put you here for that. But he promises... You will not see the wrath. This wrath is for his enemies. Persecution is for the saints. In the Old Testament, in the book of Daniel, in Psalms, in the Gospels, in the Epistles, in the book of Revelation, persecution is for the saints. Wrath is not. And so, with that being said, I think what we'll do next week is we will... I was just pointing out the rapture. You see the rapture, all those places. And then the return of Christ, Daniel, Matthew, judgment and punishment. Those are all detailed there also because there's going to be judgments taking place. The thing that I will say again that could cause some questions is right here. I'm cleaning up my board so it's not so confusing by erasing a little bit of the confusion. This is when the sign of the Son of Man is going to take place. It's going to be, they're delivered. The saints are caught up out of the great tribulation. So it's after the halfway point right here before he starts pouring out the trumpets and the bowls. The sign of the Son of Man appears in Revelation 7, 6 and 7. They see it. The Jews see it in Zechariah. When Jesus says the sign of the Son of Man, it'd be like lightning. It says all the nations will mourn. When the sign of the Son of Man appears, all the nations will mourn. Here in Revelation 7, they run and hide in caves because they see this. They're afraid of this. But as you read the rest of it, they're not hiding in caves the whole time. They're rebuilding their armies, getting ready for the great day of the Lord because they know there's a battle coming. And this is where now he engages them in battle. All of a sudden here, they're on horses. They've got military. Their nations have come together. There's been demons have been sent out to gather the kings for battle on that great day of the Lord. So here, they're running and hiding in caves. Here, they're armed, meeting him in battle. So, I mean, to me, I'm doing the right thing. The traditional thing is Jesus is in heaven. And then right here at the end, again, in a moment, all of a sudden, you don't know when, the Son of Man, there he is. It's the end of the world. It's the second coming. And then we have a picnic in the Kidron Valley that afternoon. It's like, okay, now you've just destroyed reality. I mean, if you're all going to just die and go to heaven, if we all died right now and went to heaven, we could have a picnic this afternoon because we're in the presence of the Lord. We died, went to heaven. But if you're going to come back and take over the world in real time, in a real physical universe, you're going to have 30 days of cleanup. You're going to have 45 days of judgment because people got to travel for the judgment, get plane tickets, and things are backed up, and everyone's got to get to the Kidron Valley to meet the Lord. It's like booking your tickets. You may want to plan ahead. If you got any points, what do you call them, points? What do we have? We have bonus points for tickets. What do you call those? Okay, points. Okay. No, what we got sky miles. Tony's got a word for it. That's not points. Okay, never mind. She does only plane tickets, so I don't know what it's called. So if the Lord comes back here, the rapture takes place. He's in the air, in the atmosphere, controlling these things. And then he's going to now intervene and come down for the battle. So they'll see this whole time here. And so when I say that's that again, be careful. Because when you say second coming, you think this. When I say this, because the sign of the Son of Man is the second coming. But the sign of the Son of Man is in the atmosphere. And it appears he's here for a period of time. You understand what I'm saying? We meet the Lord in the air. And so this is in a sense the appearing, the sign of the Son of Man, his second coming or his second appearing. But this is the actual, what we'd say, the battle, the takeover. This is just the time of destruction. So I understand second coming here, but I'm stretching it out to include, unless you want to separate those, because they're part of the same event. He appears in the atmosphere and is pouring out wrath and finally makes his descent to the earth. Does that one, and again, I'm not ready to go into the vocabulary, but you could get a theology book to say, well, that can't be the second coming because the second coming includes these events. Right. But it's the precessor. How do you say that? Predecessor or the precursor, the thing that comes up before. Again, now with this model, for this model, right here, the church being raptured right here, going away into heaven with the Lord, far, far away. And then we stay up here, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, boom, we come back. It's like, what? It's like, this is the day of wrath. This is the day of the Lord's wrath. And I think if he can come down on Mount Sinai, if he can do different events in history, he can definitely do what he says right here. And I'm going to have to quit. And next week, I'm going to stop and ask you any questions. Next week, we'll pick up on this chart. And I'm going to read through Matthew. And what I'm going to ask you to do is what we're doing right here, eschatological events. What are some of the events that are going to be taking place and leading up? What are we looking for? But also, can we, as I think I have done here, can we parallel Daniel's, Matthew, Luke, Paul, and Revelation? So they've all got a rapture in there. They've all got the persecution of the saints. They've all got the persecution of they've all got the appearing of the Antichrist at the beginning, the taking over of the temple here, and the Lord's second coming here, where he destroys. At his coming, he'll appear. He will destroy the Antichrist. The glorious of his appearing will destroy the Antichrist. So he appears here, but it's going to be a process. Here he actually comes down and does. Okay, I'm going to quit. We've got about 3 minutes if someone wants to ask a question or make a correction.
I do have a question.
Yes.
Why is Revelation 19 missing from this chart where John saw the marriage supper of the Lamb? Where do you see that happening and what do you imagine that being?
The marriage supper of the Lamb, there's two things I'm confused on. One is the difference between the eternal state and the millennium. You know, how those two go together. And so the marriage supper of the Lamb, I know that people put that at the rapture. They get, you know, the marriage of the Lamb, that's what's supposed to take place up here. In the pre-trib rapture theory, the church goes up and while all hell is breaking loose down here, we're having a marriage supper of the Lamb up here. The marriage supper of the Lamb could be taking place right here. Say it'd just be a shorter period of time during this time period here, when the Lord, when we meet the Lord in the air, because we're before the throne of God. So that could be the marriage supper of the Lamb. But when we talk there, you're talking about the bride coming down to the earth, the city, the holy city, right? See, now that now when you start talking about the holy city, the bride of Christ, are we talking about the church, the bride of Christ, or are we talking about another symbolism for bride? Just like Israel was the bride of Christ, and in Hosea, he divorced her, so he picked the church, you know.
Do you think of Israel as the bride of God and the church the bride of Christ?
Right.
Do you see that? I
hear that. I haven't spent time breaking that distinction out. So someone probably like yourself maybe has done more thoughts on that.
Well, because I have a Reformed theology in my background, I think they would liken it more to the Jewish wedding, so that the father selected the bride.
Right. Now, what you need to do right there is you need to find, you know, some hardcore evidence for that. Meaning,
right,
don't come say, no, because I taught that for years.
Oh, did you?
And when, yeah, but, you know, I was pre-trib, I taught, you know. But then when I went to find it, it's like a lot of that stuff is just, I mean, it's not biblical. It's
well, then, you keep that the bride was selected as almost Calvinist. He left, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And then
taken away, he goes away to prepare a house for her, comes back in the night, gets her, takes her away to this house where everybody's waiting for the big party.
And the millennium would be the marriage supper.
But I find none of that. I mean, I'm going to need someone to show me the text, because that only place that comes from is one of those things where everybody says it. And to go back and find the historical, you've got your what you want it to match. So well, that's how they used to do the weddings. Well, here's a wedding right here. You've got Canaan of Galilee. I mean, how'd that work? You've got Mary and Joseph. There's a wedding. And I mean, I don't see. So I mean, that's, for me, that's interesting. And I used it before. But what came time to use that as, see it match, it's like there's nothing there.
Okay, so that's why. Because you're undecided about mm-hmm. that, that's why you left it off this chart.
Right, right. Right. And the other thing I'm confused about is the battles. I mean, when you start reading about the battles that take place, sure, Armageddon is at the Jezreel, but you've also got all the kings coming together for battle, but you've also got them fighting against the Lord. Then you've got Jesus coming out of Edom stained with blood because he fought against the nations himself before he gets to Jerusalem, but he's coming out of Edom. Now, I'm not saying there's any conflict. I'm just, you know, it's like, oh, see, the Bible's not true. Well, no, slow down, and let's put this together like a puzzle piece. So there's several battles that take place before, after. Then all of a sudden, Judah has boots on the ground. Judah doesn't get raptured. Judah fights their way into Jerusalem and meets the Lord in Jerusalem fighting. So, I mean, Judah and the house of David are physically fighting during these final days. I mean, the church is, no, we're raptured. But Israel's going to have to march back in and meet. And that's where you're going to have the Lamb on Mount Zion with the 144,000 that had gone to the wilderness. They marched out of Edom with the Lord. I mean, that's something that you just need to slow down. I mean, I can throw a bunch of stuff out there, but it's like, I don't know how it all fits together. Except, again, put it in real time. You've got real military maneuvers taking place. So, yeah, the Bride of Christ, I don't understand, you know, Is the millennium the eternal state? Are we going to be here forever on earth, forever and ever and ever? Or are we going to be here for a literal thousand-year millennium, and then heaven and earth disappear, and there's a new heaven and new earth? Because that new heaven and new earth could be a brand new creation, because it talks about there's no water, there's no river, there's no sea. Because the sea is what is used to purify the earth. That's our cleansing. You know, that's where all the rivers run, all the filth. It's all the salt clears it. It evaporates and rains fresh water down. But in a new heaven and new earth, you won't need a sea. You will not need a purification system. There's no sin. There's no waste. There's no imperfections. So now I'm leaning towards, well, you're going to burn this whole thing up and make a new one. But then the words, you know, burn, it doesn't mean burn to destroy. It means to burn for cleansing. And that could be the bowls where God is actually burning the earth, cleansing the earth. And the new heaven and the new earth are the millennium, where he's rebuilt, he's renewed the earth, And so I'm not ready to, I mean, I've danced around those for 20, 30 years. I just haven't sunk my teeth into it. I just kind of have know what the options are and just kind of watch and kind of wait. So I'm confused on those things. So there's one question and 14 answers.
Yeah.
I get you on a book.
Oh, I have.
Okay. So we're good. So do I. So I wish someone would take them. And I'm printing another one. It's like, why? The basic is he's going to make a treaty with Israel, but he's going to break the treaty. The 7-year treaty, I don't know if he has any intention of keeping it. It's almost like buying time. Because now you got to stick in here, Gog and Magog. When does the Battle of Gog and Magog take place? When they march out of the north, out of Russia. Again, not just Russia necessarily, but all those. And they tell you, it's the terrorist states. Right now, if you go on a map, they're the terrorist states. They pick up Libya out of Africa, a couple of African terrorist countries, and they march on Israel. They're going to destroy Israel. Now, this is one thing you're watching for, depending on when Gog and Magog take place. And again, Gog and Magog are mentioned twice, because at the end of the millennium, Gog and Magog appear again. And now it's like, whoa, we already had Gog and Magog. Right, but you already had the abomination of desolation of the temple in Daniel's day, or the Maccabees, and then now it's going to happen again. And so it's like, you don't have to put them together. They said, well, there's two Gog and Magogs. Well, there's two abominations of the temple also. If Gog and Magog happen here, and the Lord comes down and protects, like, imagine, just imagine all, like the Islamic state, the Islamic world. Like if they all wanted to come together and attack Israel along with anyone else that wanted to get Israel off the map. I mean, it's hard to imagine. But just think if some countries that, I'm being facetious because that's right where we're at. And they all decide they're going to drive Israel into the sea. And they do. They surround Israel and they come at them. And all of a sudden, God intervenes. And there's earthquakes and volcanoes and all just this natural destruction of their entire military forces. It also says, including fires breaking out in all of their hometowns, all their cities, which would indicate probably the unleashing of nuclear weapons from Israel, just burning all the cities down. But they're destroyed. And then it even tells you the time. They'll use the weapons for fuel for 7 years, and it takes them weeks to get all the dead bodies down. They tell you where it's on the other side of the Dead Sea, on the east side, there's a place called Horde Magog, or Hordes of Gog. It's where the dead, it's like a mass burial, because all the militaries that came into Israel just are destroyed. And so they got just full-time positions of just carrying bodies. And then when everyone's moved out, it says they come by and they put markers if there's a piece of a body. Like, you know, there's an arm, they'll put a little flag by. And they go through, they got people that are just searching for body parts. Which makes you wonder, why are you so concerned? Why don't they just let them decay? Because they're unclean or because they're nuclear active? I mean, but they make a big, in Ezekiel, they put markers by them so someone else, the special pickup team, can come by and pick up the body parts and put them back down in there. Yeah, I mean, it's like, is it because it's ceremonially unclean? It's because it's disgusting? Or is it because there's only a special crew that can pick them up? Because, I mean, anyway, so if that takes place right here, and that would be Islam or the Muslims who are trying to take over, they're now crushed. They're now defeated. And now I start to speculate. That's why all of a sudden, sure, you can have the Temple Mount. I mean, it's just like, take the Temple Mount. We'll give you a 7-year treaty. You can have the Temple Mount. And now this group goes off and tries to rebuild. And they go off and they turn on the Western world. And we're ready to be crushed. I mean, at this time right here. And they start just taking people and territories, and they rebuild enough so that they've got themselves a military again, because they just got devastated in Israel from Gog and Magog. And now they turn back to the holy city, and they still got a problem in the south, king of the south, still got a problem in the east, China, still got a problem in the north. But here comes the Antichrist back with his rebuilt troops and says, we're done here. I was just buying time. I needed about 7 years. I did it in 3.5. Get off my temple. I'm taking it back. Boom. That's when God says, okay, we're ready. Now that, again, that a lot of speculation in that. You see what I'm saying?
The signing of that treaty, he's still unknown, isn't he, until midway.
Well, he revealed, he's a political leader here, and we'll be identifying because he just signed the treaty. Here he reveals himself as God. I mean, he... Right, but again, what's the difference, though? Okay, the difference is they have the Temple Mount. Right, I mean, when they have the Temple Mount, I mean, we now it could Julian the Apostate, one of the nephews of Constantine, they killed all each other, all his sons killed. They had anyway, he renounced Christianity. And then he went back and tried to rebuild the temple. So the Jews were all, yay! And they were actually rebuilding the temple because Justinian, or Julian the Apostate, thought, if I can just rebuild Jerusalem and Judaism, we can wipe this stupid Christianity out, because they persecuted his family. And so they're actually building. You go back 350, 400 A.D., they're actually building, and there's records of them digging. And then, of course, a bunch of legends get started. The fire was coming up, and they got to know everything they built collapsed. I mean, you got to read what is history and what is not. But he actually, so you have an Antichrist who actually went over there, made a treaty with them, and started building the temple, but it didn't get done. So that Yeah, I mean that's the key point, right? Yeah, it's not just a peace treaty for land. It's not just, it may involve more, but the thing that we're looking for, when we talk about eschatological events, when Israel is offering evening sacrifices on the Temple Mount. Now again, they're ready for this, and I've told you this before. The Temple Institute in Jerusalem, it's a little shop in one of the stores there. They've got everything there. In fact, yeah. Okay, you guys went there. Okay. Okay. And I remember sitting in the front row, and they had the golden lampstand right there, and they had me come up, and they took out one of the off the golden lampstand that's going to go on the temple. They took off one of the lamps and handed it to me, and I'm standing there holding it, and I'm thinking, my gosh, this is going to go in the temple of the Antichrist. I mean, if things were history's at right now, if this is really it, and they've got an altar there, a stone altar, that way they can bring a forklift in, pick it up, and take it to the Temple Mount tonight, set it down, and be getting all the priestly garments, everything's ready to go. And they won't have the temple built, but they can put the altar in place and have the burnt offerings this afternoon. I mean, they're ready. And they got all the snap, you know, you can put up a Morton building, they got everything ready to go to build the temple. So when they say, well, it'll take them years, it will take them 20 minutes to be up on the Temple Mount and ready to go. I mean, it'll take them, within a day, they'll be. So that's what we're looking for. Yeah, one of the signs we're looking for is this, and this is what confuses the pre-trib people. They say, well, there's no, nothing's yet to be filled. The only thing that's next thing to take place is the rapture, and then when the rapture takes place, then all these things take place. I mean, you can play that card, but I think what we're looking for, and what Paul tells the people, is we're not here because these things haven't happened yet. And then he reveals himself here, where he says he's God. He goes in there, which that's. Hell, I'll tell you one thing I've got. When I talk about Islam being part of this, one of the things that crunches my position that I haven't dealt with yet, I mean, I get this far, but what Muslim is going to go in and say he's God? I mean, that's for me the big stone that's crushing my...
He may be a Muslim who's professing only and not really.
Right, right. He may be using Islam, right. Right. Yes, yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of things. Even I've got this all ironed out. There's some hiccups. It's kind of like, if no one notices, I ain't going to say anything, you know. But, you know, okay, I'll pray, and you guys, I appreciate you taking time. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word, and we do ask that we'd be people that would be ready to face persecution, that we'd have faith in you, and that we would trust you. And again, we do thank you again for the chance to have freedom to study your word, and ask that it would spread wide and it would spread mightily as we continue to proclaim your truth. We do thank you for Jesus Christ and the Spirit. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you.